You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Sometimes I think about it too much. I'm like, should I be like Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum? Or be real happy? Hey, you're listening. No one wants to listen to someone who's too happy, do they? Is that true? But welcome. I hope you guys had a good week. And things are a little crazy with the, California's getting shut down again. Beaches last weekend were closed. And, I'm not going to go on about this. Just thought things were getting better. And, jokers caused this. Jokers. How's everybody's anxiety this week? Is everybody holding up? Are we exercising? Are we keeping to a routine? Are we going to therapy? Are we talking to someone? Are we talking this out? By the way, check out these new pillows. Holy crap. Allison made these for me. And I want to thank Leah, too, for being amazing. Look at this. Out of t-shirts. She made these pillows. I love them. Inside of You pillows. Thank you to all my Patreons, especially during this whole time. When you join Patreon, you're helping the show. Ryan thanks you. I thank you. Bryce thanks you. Thank you for supporting the podcast, going above and beyond. By just listening, you are amazing. But people who join Patreon, the amazing community. And I can't believe how many people have become friends on this thing. If you're interested, go to Patreon. Go to Inside of You under Patreon. It's an app. And support the show if you like. Also, shout out to Ronald McDonald House, Los Angeles, and all over the world. They're everywhere, and they're so important, helping families and kids going through treatments. And foodonfoot.org, I love them. Shout out to my buddy Rob. And I don't know if you saw my glasses. Sarah made them for me. They were amazing. It was like a Luther and a Kent, and it was a decanter. Is that what you call them? A decanter for alcohol. Pretty neat. It was just cool. So those are awesome. Status quo, man, just trying to keep busy, I guess. It's crazy. I think I'm a bit busier, on this whole lockdown thing. Do you guys get the feeling like, you see friends all the time, and then when you don't see friends, you get in a little depression and you're a little bit anxious, and then months go by and then you're like, I love them. I miss them, but I'm kind of used to this stuff. That's not entirely true. I do miss my friends, but the longer you don't see them, it's like, fuck, I don't even remember what it's like hanging out with them. I mean, there are a couple of people that I've seen, but not many. Trying to abide. The dude abides. Oh, you know what? I had a good cry. I had a good cry. I was watching Titanic. You guys ever seen Titanic? I know you've seen Titanic. Some people are like, I never saw that. I don't even want to see it. You realize why. I mean, James Cameron's just extraordinary, but I'm watching it. And at the end, when the old woman, she's there and she's like, she goes back into the Titanic in her mind and she's older and it's near the end. And all I thought, she's just trying to think of Jack and those moments. All I did was think of my grandma, cause I talk to her, I FaceTime her almost every day. And she's like, I miss my Irvy. I miss my grandpa. I miss my grandpa. That wasn't her grandpa, but she's like, I miss my Irvy. And I made these big signs for her at Staples because when we went to the funeral back in November, I was like, I don't want this to be just boring and tables and food. So I had these pictures blown up to these giant poster size and made like four of them of me and Irv on a go-kart and Irv playing just cool stuff. And she still has them next to her bed and she has them in the house. And she goes, I talk to Irvy every day. And it's just so sweet. But anyway, that scene in Titanic made me tear up. And I love my grandma. Call your grandmas, will you? Call whoever. Tell them you love them. It's easy. You just, here, look at this. You just dial. Let's just try to get her right now real quick.
Hello?
Hey, I just want to call you and tell you I love you.
Oh, isn't that nice? I love you too.
Yeah?
Oh, a lot.
How much on a scale from 1 to 100?
At least 100.
I was hoping you'd say like 1,000.
You said from 1 to 100.
Touche. Touche, Blanche. Hey, listen, I love you. I just wanted to check in. I'm doing my podcast right now, but I want to just see how you're doing. Are you holding up all right? You holding up for me?
Yeah, I am. I'm holding up. I called you last night. Will you be home tonight?
Yeah, you busy right now?
No. But I thought you're doing something.
Oh, yeah. Again, you're quick. All right, well, I just wanted to say hi and take care of yourself, and I can't wait to come see you. All right?
All right, I'll talk to you tonight, though.
You will.
Okay, sweetheart.
All right.
I look forward to that.
I'll be seeing you.
In all the old familiar places.
I love you. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, baby. Bye-bye.
Bye. See how easy that was? I just thought it and did it. Do it right now. You'll feel good. Terrific podcast today. Thank you guys for, you hear it all the time, but thank you. I wouldn't be here without you. If you're sitting there and you're like, I'm just listening to this one because I like Rebecca Mader, or Bex Mader, as she calls herself, and many people call her that as well. We find out why. But if you're watching it for her and you like it, please subscribe. Subscribe on YouTube. You can watch it, listen on most any, my English isn't great. You can listen to it anywhere. And I appreciate the support. Also, the Inside of You store. Cool stuff, cool shirts, cool hats, all that fun stuff. And I got to mention old Napoleon Dynamite John Heater and I have our horror Patreon as well. Another Patreon called Where Have All the Good Horror Movies Gone? And we're having a blast with that. We just did a Zoom with all the one of the tiers, and we do like a monthly Zoom and we talk about what we want to watch and what's up. And it's just a nice, it's a horror club if you're a horror fan. So thank you for all my horror Patreon fans and Inside of You Patreon fans, Inside of You podcast fans, people who just listen and love. Let's jump right into it, man. Let's get inside the fascinating, amazing. I loved Lost. Let's get inside of Rebecca Mader.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Sarah Gillard just texted me. She said to say what's up.
Aw, she's sweet. I should get her on the podcast, too. She's great. She's sweet. Well, I've met her a long time ago.
That girl.
Did you work with her? Sarah Michelle Gellar?
I only know her from Bar Method, from working out back in the day. And then I moved back to New York in 2012 because I'm like, I'm going to die alone. And we reconnected there. We had a really good time.
Like, why did you say you're gonna die alone? What the hell does that mean?
He's dating in LA. Sucks balls. Oh. That's why.
Yeah, well, if you see me looking at things, it's because I'm like I said, I'm doing all this.
I
gotta make sure I'm recording.
Postpartum titties, what's up?
postpartum titties, is that what you just said?
You're welcome.
Are you drinking a brew?
Hello, yes. Mommy's off the clock. He's asleep.
So dating, I like how you say that. I mean, it is terrible. People don't understand. In the world, in general, dating sucks, right? But then in Hollywood, I mean, give me your worst story.
I've got so many. That would be the whole podcast. Dating in LA by Rebecca Mader.
What's the one thing, though?
There's one. That's the reason I pissed myself laughing, because there's one specific date that just went poof. It was a classic. It was... I want to say the year was like 2010, 2011. I was on Lost at the time, and I'd been single for a long time, and I was going back and forth to Hawaii, but I'm like, I should make an effort today. Cool. And I found this Facebook group called Brits in LA. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, oh, cool. I'll meet some British people. They all live in Santa Monica, whatever, like go down the pub. And then this one guy asked me out on a date, and I'm like, okay. And he turned out to be such an arrogant wanker. And there was a picture of him on Facebook next to a plane. And then he spent the entire meal talking about how he was a pilot. And I was really bored. And then he said to me, he's like, so what do you do for a living then? I'm like, oh, I'm an actress. And he's like, right. So anything, you know, I was like, oh no, this is awkward. Oh, you don't want to hit your own horn and go, hello. So I was like, yeah, I'm currently on Lost. And he went, what? Are you serious? I'm like, yeah. He went, oh. And he was, I swear to God, he was devastated. It was like he was so annoyed that I was actually successful, that I wasn't like a waitress. It's like, oh my God, you're amazing. Do you want a blowjob at the end of dinner? And he was so gutted. His whole face and energy just went poof. And in that moment, he just checked out. And I just wanted, I should have just got up and fucking left. I don't know why I didn't. And it was the most uncomfortable sushi I've ever had.
I thought,
it was traumatizing.
I thought you were going to say, all of a sudden he heard you say Lost, which was like the biggest show ever back then and one of the biggest shows still. I thought he was going to say something like his whole demeanor, his whole disposition was just going to change. And then from there on, he was just really sweet. That's what I thought you were going.
No.
So he was. You emasculated him with one word, Lost.
Yeah, it was weird. Oh, sorry. Am I too successful for you? How small is your penis? Oh, my God. Good times. But that's LA, though. Like, no, and also in LA, I was finding that, you know, I was looking to get married and have kids, and I was going on dates with people so much older than me, and they're not ready to get married and have kids.
How much older?
I'm like, yeah, all right. So I moved back to New York to see if I could find a boyfriend and potential, you know, baby daddy. And I got there. I moved all my shit across the country. I didn't tell anyone. I didn't even tell my agent or my managers. I literally just shipped all my shit across the country. It cost like $6,000. And I just moved to New York. I'm like, I'm going to find a real person that's down to earth. It's going to be great. And it wasn't. It wasn't as bad as LA, but it was equally shit in a different way, because now that it's become so gentrified, because I used to live in New York back in from like 1998 to 2006, and I had an amazing time in my 20s. But then when I went back in my 30s and in 2012, it's totally different. And everyone in Manhattan, all the guys, were either a lawyer or a banker.
Oh, God, yeah. That doesn't, that's...
Okay, bro, let's do some shots, let's do some cocaine and go to the strip club. I'm like, I'm going to die alone. And it just cost me thousands of dollars to figure that out. Got it.
Well, wait a minute, too, because you also were married before.
Yes. When I was in my 20s in New York, I got married really young.
And was that one of those things where you guys, were you friends? Did everything work out? Was it nice? And then it just fell apart? Or was it kind of a spur of the moment thing? You get all hot and heavy.
No, it was a very drawn out exit stage left, but we were essentially just really, really good friends. You know, he was a really good friend and we became more like roommates and brother and sister, I think is more sort of what happened. So it was kind of like a slow dissolve, a soft fade to black.
Are you still friends?
Friendly. You know, friendly. I'm sort of still friendly with his family, and he's got sisters and kids and stuff. But he had an amazing big family, and that was really hard to lose this massive chunk of people, especially because I don't live in the country. You know, I lost everybody all at once. I was like by myself going, uh-oh.
Yeah, that's got to be hard when you sort of get attached to everybody else.
Yeah.
And once you start doing that, then now you find yourself single. So you're not only single and you hate dating and you're meeting this guy who's a douchebag, but then on top of it, you're like, oh my God, now I was married and I still have these connections, which is sort of a link to him.
You know what you just reminded me of that I totally keep forgetting is that someone broke up with me because I was on Lost. Like the guy that I was seeing when I got the part was like a bit disappointed that I'd gotten it. And I'm just like, what? Like my dreams are coming true. And he's like, congratulations. I'm like, why don't you just phone in that bloody response? And then after a while, he's like, you know what? I don't really want to be with someone that's going to get recognized. So see you later. I'm like, I'm sorry. What? You knew
what?
I wasn't. Okay, cool. It's like all these blokes along the way, like, well, I like you, but I don't like you successful. So bye.
What is that? There's something psychological there. I'm sure you have a therapist. I'm not.
Energy, isn't it?
Well, like, you know, I don't know what that is, because I mean, if you like someone, you just like, hey, I want to support you, what you do. I'm happy for you. And in fact, if they're not an actor, maybe it adds a little spice to their life. It's, you know, it's not like you want to date. Oh, I mean, you're dating. You married an actor.
No, I did not.
Isn't he a director or like a writer, or he's not in the industry?
He has a production company and he has produced TV shows, but he also has other businesses that are really successful. So he's not like in Hollywood, but he knows enough that he understands what I do, but he's not like balls deep in it, which is perfect.
I love how you.
I think it would be a nightmare.
I love these phrases you use. It's really good. Now, how do you know when you met him, what was different? So is it Marcus, right?
Mark.
What was different about him than the other guys that you were right away? Was it the first date where he did something and you thought, huh, what was it?
We didn't have a first date ever because we had mutual friends in common and he was in another relationship. So I'd sort of gotten to know him over a long period of time. And then, so it was kind of like a slow get to know. And then he and his ex-girlfriend broke up. And then I hadn't worked in ages. Oh my God, it was awful. I was like 70 grand in debt, homeless, and me and my dog couldn't even stay together. This is only in 2013.
Why were you like, $70,000 in debt?
I hadn't worked in ages.
But still.
Through my savings because I had to borrow money and like I had a loan. It was awful. I couldn't afford my car anymore.
This is post-Lost.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird. It was like, I was thinking coming off of Lost, I'm like, I'm good. And then it was not. And then when I was working, maybe it was like a guest spot or something little, which is a lot less money than when you're a series regular, as you know. So it kind of gotten really, really crap. So when I met Mark, I had that year in 2013, I tested for 11 pilots.
And got zero. Now, what does that do psychologically to you? Does that give you... Did you fall into depression? Did you get anxiety?
It was something that I had to put a lot of energy into surrendering. Do you know what I mean? Because it was a blow and it hurt. Jinx. I got on the phone with my team and I'm like, I want you to go out there and I want you to call everybody and get feedback because the only common denominator in all of this is me. So if it's something I'm doing wrong, if it's like my American accent was shit or they didn't think I was connected to the material, whatever the fuck it was, I need to know. Otherwise... I don't even know. If I don't learn from this, then what was the point? Because this hurts. And so they went out and then they came back to me a couple of days later and they were like, none of it was your fault. I'm like, come on, piss off. You know, can't none of it be me. But it was all really weird. It was like, one was like, you know, it was an ethnicity thing out of my control. And another thing was like, they had to go Canadian visa wise. It was all these weird, stupid, little, completely different reasons that totally outside of my control. So I had like a come to Jesus moment. I'm like, fuck it. I'm just going to have to. Hashtag surrender. And I just threw it all up to the universe and just decided to have a great summer instead. And just whatever it is, what it is. And that was the summer that me and my husband fell in love. And I was in a really good mood, even though things were really crap.
Because love conquers all, doesn't it? But you know what? But you know, in a way, it's true. When you really are in love and you're that feeling you have, I haven't experienced it a lot in my life, but I would say that it's definitely top few feelings that you get. It's definitely more exciting than going, oh my God, I got this part. When you're in love with somebody and you're like,
I even feel that way. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love my husband, but becoming a parent is way more next level in terms of love because it's a different kind of love. And it's like, I will cut a bitch. I will die. I will throw myself into oncoming traffic. This like, all of a sudden there's this person that you would literally do anything for. Like you can get annoyed and want to punch your spouse, but with your child, it's like, whatever you do, you can shit in my face. I'm like, I've got this.
I'm sure.
It's totally different. And when we're smushing, the oxytocin and like the feelings that are released, it's like better than any drug in the world. You're just like, I'm like inhaling him. Like, I can't get enough. And it's like, woo, it's like such a high. And then I, you know, and it's really helped me get through this pandemic and everything because it's been a really rough time for everybody. And I think being able to smush him has really kind of kept my mood up.
Did you think of at one point, what am I doing with my life? I'm going to quit acting. I'm going to quit all this shit. It's just bringing me down. Because think about it. It's just like, you know, your life from day to day, it changes. Your emotions change with, I got a part or I got this callback or I didn't. So you're up and down, up and down. And are you an emotional person where you would feel each one?
Oh my God. I'm the most emo person ever. I mean, I'm just nothing but a bunch of feelings 24/7.
Can you cry like that? I mean, like lose your shit?
Yeah. I can cry from 2 seconds ago. I'm so connected to my emotions, which is a good and a bad thing. It's fun for my husband.
He saw that early though, right? He saw like, okay, she's emotional.
Yeah. I mean, I don't hold back. I mean, I'm totally myself and I'm authentic, but I feel things, which is a blessing and a curse because I've had to learn how to not take on other people's shit because I'm so sensitive. If someone's in pain, I'll cry with them. I'm feeling it too. And it used to really like,
yeah,
deplete my energy so much I had nothing left to give myself.
Did you go to therapy about it? Did you speak to someone? You do. Do you still do that?
I love therapy.
Yeah, I do too.
I'm not currently in therapy, but I have spoken about it. And like, I've tried to sort of learn tools to kind of hold space for somebody that I love and be present and be there for them, but not completely connect to it energetically, where you can kind of just hold space here, be empathetic, but then not like absorb it, where you're like, oh God, afterwards, you know? So but that's like, I think what you learn over time as you get older. I couldn't do that when I was younger. That's all.
You know, every time I talk to my friend Tom, he always has advice. And I remember throughout the years, he's like, I know you want to be in a relationship bad, dude. I know. I just want you to know one thing. Imagine all your shit. Now you've got all their shit. So you got all their shit and all your shit. I know you think it's great. I mean, there's moments. It's a lot, dude. It's a lot because their shit is your shit. And if you don't want to deal with their shit, it goes to shit.
A lot of shit. That's perfect. If, I mean, that one sentiment there just eradicates all relationship books. Like, that's just, it sums it up. That is relationships. Relationships is taking someone else's bag of shit. The end.
It kind of is. And, you know.
And it's also how much of their shit can you handle? You want to, like, throw it in the doggy, you know, trash can on the side of the road. It's a lot.
What's the best advice a therapist ever gave? Because there's certain things a therapist has told me and I go, oh, my God. You know, little things along the way. What was it that really connected you?
I had a big one. I had a big, big one about a year and a half ago, because I was talking about, you know, how there's like that old adage where people go, oh, well, you know, in England anyway, like, oh, you marry your father, da da da. And I was talking to a therapist. I'm like, that's so weird. I'm like, I haven't married my dad at all. Like, my husband and my dad are nothing like. And she let me waffle on for a while with a sort of smirk on her face. I'm like, waiting to give her a response. I'm like, what? And she went, it's like, you don't marry your father, dear. You marry your dominant parent. And I just went, what? She's like, I'm going to give you a minute. And all of a sudden I realized I've married my mom.
Oh my God.
Because you do. You marry your dominant parent.
That's not true completely.
I don't know.
I mean, that might be true for some people, but like, for instance, like, look, I love my mother. I wish, you know, I, we don't need to get into that. But I just want to say that I certainly try to marry someone that is, and not, no disrespect, she's who she is, and it's, I can't marry someone like me or like my mother. I need to marry someone who is sort of the antithesis of that, someone who kind of calms me, tells me to shut the fuck up, someone who I'm attract, you know. So I don't know if that
your parents in their relation, are they together?
No, they've been divorced for 15 years. My dad remarried and he got divorced. My mom's.
But before they got divorced, who was the dominant parent out of the two? Like, who wore the trousers in the relationship?
Oh man, it was really like, you know, my mom was just off the wall. So my mom would walk into a room and we're watching the Mets game. And all of a sudden she would just go, "You're fucked." To my dad, and then go, and just storm out. I'm like, I looked at my dad. He's like, what the fuck? What's wrong with you? You know, she just said what was on her mind, and something, no filter at all. She didn't know if she was making people uncomfortable. So she has a huge heart, but she's the opposite of my dad. So my dad was very reserved, private. I'd never seen my dad naked. One time I saw his balls, it upset him. But, you know, she was kind of out there. So he was like, I was amazed sometimes how they were together, but then that you talk to my grandmother would be like, he was crazy about her. He Aww. Was so crazy for so long. And then I think it just got, you know, because he wasn't a jealous guy, but she was sort of doing things to provoke him. And it just didn't end well. It just did not end well. Do you think that are there certain rules with your marriage where you're like, you know, is he very comfortable with himself, or he doesn't, you know, does he get jealous? Do you get jealous? How do you deal with all that stuff?
I would say I'm more of a jealous person. I've always been like that my whole life. It's definitely, I'm way more jealous, but there's no like rules or anything, but I think there's sort of like this sort of understanding that like, it would be weird for me to like meet a straight guy and then have lunch with him. Like, we don't, you know what I mean? It's like any male friends of mine are male friends that predate him, or they don't want me sexually because they, you know, are gay or whatever. So that's different, because like, that's really the only, like, I would say is like the rule. Like, I don't meet a new guy and have a new guy friend. that's straight. That's weird.
Yeah. So, I mean, are there certain things that you guys feel like you have to tell each other everything, like every last thing? Or is it just like, I trust you, go do what you want?
When I was younger, I always like wanted my boyfriend to be like my girlfriend, like my best girlfriend, and hear about my day and blah, 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 blah. And then this was also good advice from a therapist. She said, he doesn't want to hear it. I don't even remember who I was with at the time. She's like, men just hear blah, 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 blah. When is she going to get to the point? And then with women, she's like, what about when you call a friend or when a friend calls you? And I'm like, oh my God, tell me everything. Wait, I have to get a beer. What were you wearing? Was it a Tuesday? It was Thursday. Oh, that changes everything. Wait a minute. What were you wearing? We have to know all the details for all the story. And that's when I've learned to realize that strengthening my female friendships improves my romantic relationships, because I'm never going to get what I want, all of it, from a man, because what women get from other women is something that I don't think a man can really give. Like the way that we hang and talk shit and cry in each other's arms, like you get a different kind of support from women.
Do you think women get meaner? You know how men can do things that are hurtful and say things, but when women, in other words, when guys talk about women behind the women's back. So if the guys are downstairs talking about something, the group of them, they're like, and they could say things, and it's shallow. It's this. Oh, she had small boobs, or oh, she had this. Oh, really? You know, guys could, you know, get in their little groups and say their shit. Do women get just as bad? Are they like, oh my God, he's such a, ugh, that guy's such gross. He's gross. I bet he has the smallest dick. Like, you guys get into that shit?
I mean, I think women can be equally as bitchy as men, but I think when you're in your 20s, you might be friends with people that aren't good for you or people that could be bitchy to you and tear you down. But the best thing for me about getting older is you don't waste your energy on that. So for me, the female friendships that I have now, none of these people would talk shit about me behind my back, nor I them, because over time you weed out all the dicks.
Yeah.
You know, so now, so as you get older, like for me, it's like my female friends have become, it's like hanging out on Zoom or Skype in a pandemic with a friend with a glass of wine, soups chilled, is way better than any therapy session, because those are the kind of like friends that I have, the chats that we have. We're afterwards, you might have mind-blowing moments where you have this realization about something, and it's like, and I grow just from hanging out with my mates, you
know? All right, tell me if I'm wrong here. I feel like women aren't, from what I gather from friends, other girls, you know, for instance, I have a friend, she got something done to her face, immediately I can't hold anything back. I'm a close friend. I just go, what the fuck did you do? What? I didn't do anything. Yeah, you did. Don't fucking lie to me. Look at your mouth. It's like briefcase handles. What is that? She goes, I don't know what you're talking about. I go, don't lie to me. Come on. Now women will go, oh my God, you look, I don't know, I'm doing your accent, but you know what I mean? They're like, oh, you look great. Oh no, you're not fat. Oh no, you're not. Where I'm like, someone asked me a question. It is rude to not, I mean, show some propriety, but how could, I don't like when women are too nice to their friends. They're too nice. They're like, no, sweetie, you're wrong. No one sees that. Tell them what people see. Do you think I'm fat? Honestly, you're my best friend. Please tell me. I go, look, I think you're beautiful inside out, but I will not lie to you. Could you lose a few pounds? Sure, we all could. You put it in a certain way, but don't lie to them. Don't sit there and go, yeah. Or am I too skinny? I want people around me who are honest. Not so much that they don't.
I agree. And I think I used to be like that kind of girl where I think because I wanted to be liked, I didn't dare say something negative to somebody. And I also was so terrified of hurting other people's feelings. That was always one of my greatest fears, was making somebody else feel bad, because I was bullied so much growing up. So I would be the person like, no, no, you look fine. You look brilliant. I love your new lips. You don't need to use them. You're gorgeous. Like, I totally used to be like that. I did. But I have to say, I just get more and more and more honest. And I don't want somebody's lies. Like if I say to someone, I'm feeling a bit weird in my body at the moment and I feel like I need to lose a few pounds, my best friends will probably go, well, how can I help you do that? Which is agreeing, right? But in a way that lifts me up and says, how can I be of service to you in achieving that? Rather than like, no, no, you're fine. Because if someone says that to me, then I don't want to be your fucking friend. It's like, tell me the truth.
Listen, you said earlier, you threw this away like it was nothing. And you know, I'm gonna hammer you with it. You said you were bullied as a kid.
Yeah.
Why were you bullied? And how old were you?
It started when I was four.
Four.
There was this girl at my school that basically bullied me for the 3 years of that school. Because in England, you have like infant school, junior, and then you go to secondary school. So it's like from the age of four to seven.
Did you say infant school?
Infant school.
Is that what you call it?
It's either called infants or it's called primary.
Okay.
Primary and secondary. And it was horrible. It was almost like she was my captor or something. Like she owned me. It was horrible. I dreaded going to school. It made me feel sick to my stomach. And then when I went to another school and moved away from her, I had some pretty good years. And then another group swept in and they all just decided to bully me together as a group, this group of girls, and just ruined my time at that school, junior school. And then I went to another school, you move on to the next one. And then it happened there with these other girls and they would like follow me on the way to school on their bikes and try and trip me up and push me.
Why? Do you know the reason? Were there a certain reason that they call you certain names?
Yeah, they were like, called me like a posh twat and things like that. Because where I, you know, in England, how you speak determines everything, right?
Because and you were born in Cambridge, right?
Yeah, because the class system is still very much in place. Your accent determines how you're treated or perceived by people, you know? Mm. So I think I got into a group of friends when I was like 14 that were posher than me. Like, you know, their parents lived in Cambridge because mummy and daddy studied literature there and then stayed. Whereas I'm a local that's from there, like generationally, the English side of my family was from there. And I think when I got into this group of friends, my accent kind of got a bit posher. So then it pissed off the other people from my previous school. Like, who the fuck do you think you are now? Do you think you're fucking special? And then they would get their friends like come and kick me at lunchtime. And I used to hide and eat my lunch. I'd go for a bike ride at lunchtime and like eat my sandwich by myself.
And how long did this last? Through high school?
Up until I was 14, 15. So it was like from the age of 4 to 14. So off and on, different people for a decade. Yeah.
Well, do you have any close friends from back then who kind of stuck with you?
Not from those years, no. No. I've got two very good friends from home, but that happened after I kind of got away from all the bullies. But it was shit. I hated it. It ruined school. I still have nightmares about being at school and I wake up drenched in sweat. I mean, it's still very much in me and in a part of me. And it's definitely shaped who I am. And I think it's why I'm still like a normal, not to toot my own horn, but people say to me, oh, don't ever change. Or when I started acting, it's like, I can't, because like, I'm still like this, like chunky acne bullied person inside still.
Isn't that funny? Not that I'm just saying in general, because that's how I feel. People don't understand that, but when things happen to you, when you're younger, and you're bullied or you're told you're stupid or you're told certain things, it doesn't matter how successful you are or get, for some reason, those things still stick with you, even if they're almost subliminal or subconscious. I mean, and they sort of find their way out if you let them.
Well, it's still not completely like, you know, saged out of my experience. It's still in there. Like I've definitely worked on it in therapy and, you know, just try to kind of like fix that part of myself, but it's still in me. Because I would say that like my biggest trigger is being bullied. So if I feel under attack or if someone's coming after me, it's really hard for me to just be like soups chill about it and like let it rush off my back, because yes. It's like me, I'm like, no, you don't get to talk to me like that, leave me alone. And it's like, yeah. Of me that's like fighting for four-year-old me going, I've got this, because I'm trying to be for myself what I didn't have then at the time. And it's really hard for me to stop doing it. It's like, Rebecca, you're not four. Like, stop acting from that inner child.
I still do that too. If I feel like if somebody's condescending or making me feel dumb, it's almost a defense mechanism where I'm starting to feel like, oh, and then I kind of get like, no, whoa, it comes back up and it comes out and different emotion comes out because I don't want to let this crush me. So what I do is I kind of get mad. I can feel it in my chest and I know it's wrong. And I'm like, no, that's not what I'm saying. And I will like, there's no reason. Sometimes I'm like, why are you even doing this? And it's because does this ever come out? Has this ever come out on a set? Have you ever just really clashed with someone where you're just like, this person is just, I don't get it. I feel like I'm being bullied. I feel like they're just disrespecting me and you just want to crush them somehow.
I don't think I have actually.
That's really?
A really good question, because it's definitely happened to me in my personal life a lot, and it happens to me in relationships all the time. But I don't think it's ever happened on set where I felt bullied in particular by a person. Other negative things may have happened, like maybe they were inappropriate or unkind or trying to neg me and put me down, which I guess is a form of bullying. But I don't know, not where I've wanted to just like go completely postal and just like get really English. Because there's that in there as well. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
What? Yeah.
But you so would that, if you had to.
Yeah. Yeah. I would. I probably would do it more now that for my son. Like if someone tried to bully him. I really hate bullying. I just have no patience for it. And I really, really hate it. And when I find out that people are being bullied, I get really upset. And I think, what can I do? How can I help? Like, and I think that's one of the reasons why I've got such an amazing connection with a lot of the people that watched Once Upon a Time, because I met so many people that suffered from it too. And it was really cathartic for me to share my stories with my fans and listen to theirs and sort of understand it, you know, and kind of not let it take over your life. So that's been really cool in a way.
You know, I think the bullying thing is also going to be very good. You having experienced that and raising a son, I would know because I don't have a son, but with Milo, there's things that you could learn that you've learned that you could tell him that if you didn't experience that, maybe you wouldn't have sort of informed him and kind of gave him an idea of like, hey, this is happening, but you can relate to it. So you could sort of maybe express how you feel and maybe educate him a little more on that.
Definitely. I don't regret anything about my past, and I also don't have pain about things that happened to me, because selfishly, you know, it's made me a better actor. And I think, you know, I've worked with actors that have had fantastic childhoods, like the kind of people that you would meet, you know, like what you were saying about wishing to have different parents. And, you know, I've worked with actors that had amazing upbringings and were always attractive. And I find people like that really hard to relate to and quite boring. So people that have had like fucked up childhoods or used to be overweight and have acne like me, I find it colorful and interesting and been through stuff. And those are the actors that I really like to play with, people that have lived, you know. So it's just made me a more interesting person. It's going to make me a better parent. So fuck it.
Inside of You is brought to you by Nutrafol. Well, it's apropos. It's, you know, it's good that we're talking about Nutrafol. Because, hair thinning impacts a lot of us. In fact, me, it's starting to affect me. Over half of us will experience hair thinning at some point in our lives. It's not only common, it's normal. And you should join over 1 million people who are doing something about it with Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement. Number one. With over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding.
Hair thinning is complicated. The problem is it actually could be much bigger than your hair alone. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health, and internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and grows.
Nutrafol's whole body approach multi-targets possible underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker, stronger hair.
When it comes to thinning hair, there are many possible root causes at play, and Nutrafol helps address them through a multi-targeted, whole-body approach.
Nutrafol helps support hair growth from within by targeting possible key root causes of thinning, stress, hormones, environment, nutrition, lifestyle, and metabolism through whole-body health.
While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy.
In Nutrafol's own clinical study, 72% of men saw more scalp coverage after taking Nutrafol men's hair growth supplement for 6 months, and 86% of women saw improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol women's hair growth supplement for 6 months. Take their hair wellness quiz at Nutrafol.com for a personalized hair health plan based on your specific possible root causes.
With Nutrafol, getting help building a hair growth routine is simple. Purchase online, no prescription or doctor's visits required, free shipping and automated deliveries ensure you'll never miss a day. You could see results in 3 to 6 months.
Take the first step to help you see visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter promo code INSIDE. Find out why over 4,500 professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code INSIDE.
That's Nutrafol.com, promo code INSIDE.
Find out why 4,500 professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code INSIDE. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code INSIDE. Inside of You is brought to you by Factor. Factor Meals has changed my life. I am not spending tons of money ordering delivery service all the time anymore. I get delicious meals that are customized to my liking. I can make them in just 2 minutes. I have a menu of over 35 options delivered to my door. Calorie smart, keto, protein plus, vegan, veggie, you choose. Discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feeling good all day long. And these meals are delicious. I've had their chicken. I've had their chili. I have had their burgers. This is delicious. You're going to save money and no more stress going to the grocery store, Ryan. You don't want to go to the grocery store all the time when you can have your meals delivered right there for you.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. You simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Tailored to your schedule, customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Head to factormeals.com/inside50. And use code INSIDE50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code INSIDE50 at factormeals.com/INSIDE50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. You like how for 30 minutes we just talked about all this stuff? This is what I like.
But you know what was amazing? Playing such a broken, kind of damaged character on once was that she was so jealous. Like, they made that why the Wicked Witch went green, right? That was why I was green, was because I was green with envy. And with the relationship with my sister, you know, I got to there was this one director that just said, you can just go after her the entire episode. Like, every scene you were in, just fight like a fucking dog. And I had been waiting for someone to give me permission. I spent the whole episode going, I'm gonna take everything you ever had for the whole episode. And I was talking to everybody that had tried to fuck me over since I was four in every scene, just like the Exorcist. My head popped off and spun around. It was amazing.
It's probably cathartic.
Spiritual colonic, like so good.
When you first got lost, was that like a game changer? Did you know? Because they told you, what did they tell you? We're like, oh, it's just one episode. It might be two. That you knew it was going to be longer, that you can't just come on and get, you know.
I initially was told it was going to be eight. It was supposed to be like an eight episode arc. And then I ended up doing, I think, like 22 or 23.
And I'm sure they gave you tons of money to do it.
Well, no, I wouldn't say tons because it's ABC Disney. So it's not like shishing, shishing, but it's like I had different contracts for different seasons. But it was like going into this, it was never about the money. It was like, okay, I am joining a brand new machine that's never been built before. There's never been anything like this before. This is actually a big fucking deal because I wasn't watching the show when I had the audition. And then I went to Barnes & Noble at the Grove and got season one on DVD. And I'm like, I'm going to manifest this. I'm going to watch every episode and pretend I'm preparing for a role because I'd just seen The Secret. You know, it was like back in 2007 when that was a big deal. And I was like, I'm just going to go for it. But then, of course, when I started watching it, I'm like, oh, my God, this is amazing. How the fuck have I not been watching this for the past 2 years?
Yeah,
all my friends watched it. Like, why are you watching Lulz? And then when I started watching it, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm an idiot. This is amazing. And like... okay, well, this is probably going to change my life.
Was it intimidating getting on that set all of a sudden? What, your first scene wasn't your first scene with a bunch of actors?
Yeah, my first scene was with, like, you know, Locke and Sawyer and Claire and Hurley, like, all of the, in the first day was bonkers. And Benjamin Linus shot me in the chest. Oh,
that's right. I remember that scene.
My first day at work. Ugh. It was epic. So I watched 66 episodes in 3 weeks in preparation for my first day at work, because I joined in episode like 402 and all three seasons were already out on DVD. So I had like 2 weeks to like pack up and get ready to go to Hawaii. And I was watching the season finale of season three in my hotel room waiting for Transpo to pick me up. And they're all like, the world is like going, wow, wow. And they're on their hands and knees and then... And then they're like, Rebecca, we're ready for you. And then I went straight into the next season. It was the sickest thing I've ever experienced in my life. It was like I climbed inside my Apple computer. I was like in the episode. It was so weird.
Was it intense? Really? Was it, JJ wasn't directing a lot of them at this point, right? He just was producing it. So you didn't really get to meet him.
I think he did he definitely did the pilot. I don't know if he did any others. I would have to look at that online. I'm not sure.
Right. But you, one thing I always say is when you audition, you get a role, at least you know that that's the way you're going to play it, because that's why they cast you. If you get an offer, it seems so cool. Like, I got an offer for that. But it's not fun because you go on set and they're like, no, can you try it like this? You're like, oh, shit, I don't know what I'm doing here. I've had that where I'm like, I got an offer and then I'm doing something. And they're like, no. I'm like, what? You hired me. There's something scary about it, but you knew, like, you had the confidence. You were there. There wasn't really molding it, or it was sort of.
There was on Lost. I auditioned for that. That wasn't an offer.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so to me, I felt confident because they liked what I'd done in the room, so I felt like I knew what I was doing. But with Once Upon a Time, that was an offer, and I wasn't. They never said how they wanted me to play it, which was really nice. And I got to just kind of do my own thing. And they were like, "Whatever you're doing, we love it. Keep doing it." I'm like, "Okay."
Were those long days? It had to be long days.
Mm-hmm. But it was cool because it was such a big ensemble cast. It wasn't like, you know, you were in all the scenes in this, you know, like with small casts where you work all day, This was easier because it was like 10 series regulars plus all the guest stars plus everybody else. So sometimes, you know, you might have two or three great scenes and only work 2 or 3 days, and then you'd have like 5 days off.
Ooh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was wet and it was cold and it was physically grueling, and there was lots of stunts and lots of rain. And we shot in the rain always because Vancouver, as you know, is like, it's technically a rainforest. So for 6 months of the year, it was raining and we shot outside at night in the rain. And we just shot in the rain, you know, with like a big scrim above our heads to get the pole and push it and whoosh. And what was crazy is like, I remember thinking it'd be like 4 o'clock in the morning. My gowns are so heavy and wet for the rain. I got, you know, mud up to my knees, and it'd be like, bum, 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 rain just hitting the thing over our heads in a scene. I'm trying to shout over the rain. And I'm like, how is this usable footage? But then cut to, you watch the episode and they were able to like pull the rain out like nothing had happened. I'm like, what? Bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, that character, I mean, you're playing an iconic, and by the way, you're not coming on right away in the first freaking year. You didn't come in until season three, right?
It was a very similar experience to Lost, where I kind of like got inserted into a pre-existing hit.
See, that's not easy though. Maybe for you it is. Maybe you're an anomaly.
Yeah, because like when you're on a show from the beginning and you're in the pilot, it's amazing in other ways where it's like it's your show and it's your baby and it's your thing. But then also if it fails, it's all on you, you know? And then, I don't know, I feel like going into something that's already really shiny, I mean, was such a blessing to me because it was already a hit. I knew it was going to air. I mean, how many pilots have I done that never even saw the fucking light of day? It's so disappointing. I was like, at least this work will be seen by people. It won't be completely for nothing, you know?
Yeah, the only other question for that is, you know, the musical episode. Did you sing?
Is that your favorite?
Well, I watched some clips. I didn't see the whole episode. Did you sing in that?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Do you remember the lyrics?
Of course I do. I mean, I sometimes sing, like over the past sort of year or two, would get up on stage and sing my song at conventions.
What were the lyrics to the song?
Oh my God, it's a 4-minute song, Rosie. That would take 4 minutes.
Well, I didn't ask you to sing the 4-minute song. I said, what are some of the lyrics? Like, oh, I'm wicked, I'm green.
That's exactly how
it goes. Now you know why I'm mean. What is it?
It's called Wicked Always Wins. So it's like me winning and going to take my sister down and da-da-da-da-da. But it was really cool because to shoot my song was a full day where just me in Oz with my munchkins. And it was the same as shooting a music video. It was so cool. And they play the song really loudly on playback. And then I really sang along with it rather than mouthing it. Otherwise your neck, which I did never thought because I'm not a singer, like your neck wouldn't move right if you're just, you know, mouthing the words. So I really sang it all day long as well and came up with the choreography. And it was
how long did you have to learn the actual song?
I think we had about 3 weeks. They had a singing teacher for us in LA, and then he would Skype with us in Vancouver and give us singing lessons. And then we recorded it. We had like one session in a recording studio in Vancouver, and then that was it.
You know, I have to ask you about Meryl Streep. Come on, because so far you haven't told me you get nervous at all, but you had to be nervous in front of Meryl Streep when you first met her. Chug the beer. Go ahead. Nope, you weren't nervous. I could tell. Okay.
I mean, I didn't feel like, oh, I didn't like poo my pants. She just, I don't know. I just felt very, very excited. And she's just so normal and chill and present and kind that there was one time we were sitting in her office when we were shooting, and they were doing something with the lighting, but they said, like, don't go to your chairs. Can you just stay here? We're just going to fix something. So I remember my heels were killing me, and I was in, like, you know, her character's office, and I was like stretching out on her couch, and like Meryl had her feet up in her UGG slippers on her desk, but she's doing a crossword, and I'm drinking my latte, and this other actress was like, "What is wrong with you?" I'm like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "You're like lying down and relaxed. It's fucking Meryl Streep, and you're like stretching it out, like you weirdo." But like, she just genuinely made me feel, and I felt that comfortable around her. It was like really yummy energy.
Did you ask to take a picture with her or sign an autograph?
I rapped. I was like, oh, don't be that person. I'm so not that person.
I'm that person.
I hate asking for people. I never, ever, ever.
Who gives a shit? Why?
But I just thought, in my career, what if it doesn't get better than this? And there's really nothing better than her. It's like doing a movie with the Queen and then going, ah. And I was like, I don't want to regret it when I'm older that I didn't at least ask. I thought, worst case scenario, she could say, I'm not comfortable with that. Sorry, darling. And then that would be fine too. So after I wrapped, I snuck up to her trailer and I knocked on the door and I'm like, Meryl, darling, I'm so sorry to bother you, but I've wrapped. And she's like, oh no. I'm like, can I please have a photo? Of course you can. Get in here. She was so nice.
I had that same experience with Robert Englund in 98 for Urban Legend. I was like, what if it doesn't get better than meeting Freddy Krueger? I'm taking a picture with Fred Krueger right now.
That's one of the first Nightmare on Elm Street, one of my favorite films of all time. And the first ever convention I did was a horror convention.
And she was there?
In Florida. And I'd never been to a convention in my life. Plus I was signing, so I didn't understand what was going on. And then I heard someone at my table say that Robert Englund was there. I'm like, what? Where? And I jumped up and left my table. And I'm like running, looking for Freddie. And he was doing photo ops. And I walked in. He had no idea who I was. I'm like, hiya! And I like jumped in next to him. And he put like the blades around my face. And I'm going, ah! Oh, my God.
Nicest guy. I remember the poster. It said, if Nancy doesn't wake up screaming, she won't wake up at all.
Oh, creep. 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you.
3, 4. And do you know the later numbers though? 9, 10, never sleep again. What's 11, 12? 11, 12, going straight to hell. 13, 14. There's no.
Remember once he cut the top of that guy's head off, and he's like, "You'll be I'll be the beauty, you be the brains." When I was 11, I had a full size poster of Freddy Krueger, like of the door, stuck with blue tack on the back of my bedroom door. I could see him from bed doing this.
I have a doll of him right there. I have a doll up there of him. So I mean, I have some. Yeah, same shit. Same.
Love him.
What's your favorite Freddy Krueger quote?
That one, I'll be the beauty, you be the brains. When he cuts the guy's, when he scalps that guy, and his brain's like pulsating out. That's my favorite.
I think I like, welcome to prime time, bitch. And the fourth one, I think, Dream Warriors. And then also in the first one, he goes, Tina.
Oh,
and she looks at him. And then he says, this is God. And he cuts his fingers off. All right, these are questions, shit-talking questions for Rebecca Mader. Why Bex? Is Bex a thing for Becky? Rebecca?
I've never been called Becky. Bex?
Becky Mader.
My husband actually really brought it back. Some of the guys at school, like my guy friends, used to call me Bex, like B-E-C-K-S. And then when my husband and I got together, he started calling me Bex. I was like, oh, I love it when people call me that. But then it became B-E-X rather than that. And he always calls me Bex. You know, it doesn't call me anything else.
And now you have a thing with your brother at home with Sean and Bex.
Yes, there you go.
And you can find that on Instagram.
But people that follow me, everyone calls me Bex. Except for my parents now. They call me Beck.
I never call you Bex. I just call you Mater.
A lot of people call me Mater. Everyone in my agent, my whole team all call me Mater. It's so funny how people do different names for me. And then my nieces call me Aunt Becca. Like I'm a Becca.
This is shit talking questions from my patrons. And these are quick fire. Ashley E., how long did it take to put on that green makeup?
1.5 hours.
I got you beat. It was like 2.5 for my baldness, but that wasn't my question. Anna A, how fun was it to play such an iconic character as a Wicked Witch of the West? How long was the makeup process? We told you that, 1.5 hours.
It's one of the best things that's ever happened to me. Literally changed my fucking life. And I don't know, man, that character will be with me forever. Love it, love it, love it, love her, miss her.
Who do you miss most on the show? The one right then it just came to mind. What was that?
I was going to say, I don't miss any of them because we're all still friends and we're all here in LA. I'm friends with so many people from that show. It's abnormal.
Jennifer Morrison was on the show. I love her.
I walked away with at least 10 friends. Like when you leave a show, you're lucky if you get one goodie. I've got loads. Like at my baby shower, half the room were onesers.
Oh, I love that.
It's crazy, yeah.
Marissa Ann, what was one of the most exciting or most challenging scenes to do in Once Upon a Time?
Exciting, definitely the musical episode for sure. And then challenging would be going like traipsing through mud and snow at 4 o'clock in the morning with walking pneumonia and wanting to die and having to like deliver a fucking monologue or a 20-minute, speech when I couldn't breathe and wanted to die. It was so cold and that was hard.
Dust off. If you could make your own character in Once Upon a Time, who would it be and what powers would you have and would you use them for good or evil?
I wouldn't want to be another character other than the Wicked Witch of the West. And if I could have an extra power just outside of it, I've always wanted, I wouldn't mind stealing like Harry Potter's invisibility cloak. I'd love.
I knew you were going to say that. And someone just told me, well, I didn't know about Harry Potter, but being invisible. And they said, when people want invisibility, it can only be used for one thing. And that's bad. That's a bad thing. If you would do good things, you want to be seen. If you do bad things, you don't want to be seen. Hence invisibility. That's what I'll say. Lisa H. in playing Zelina. I said that right.
Zelina.
How is it for your acting process going from villain to what some people see as a good person? Do you feel her character development was more of a redemption story?
There was definitely an arc where I went from being less psycho and less bitchy. But I think the vulnerable part of my character was always there, which was fun. Because it wasn't like I was just angry and cold from the beginning. I was definitely emotional and broken and got to show that throughout. So at least that was there. It wasn't just like, oh, I was really nasty and then I was really nice. It was a cool arc, but they always wrote places for me to show my vulnerability from the beginning, which was cool.
Danny, I like that Rebecca describes herself as a fangirl and a sci-fi geek. What are your favorite shows?
My God. Game of Thrones, I would say, probably number one. I love that show. I auditioned for the pilot.
For who?
For Queen Cersei.
Ooh.
Can you imagine?
Wow.
Yeah, I remember the audition at HBO, and I just had surgery. And I was so out of it. I don't know how I remembered lines. And I sort of did the before, was like, well, do you know, blah, 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 I slept with my brother in a tower. I don't know what I did, but I was in the mix for like 6 weeks.
Oh.
And
H, do interactions with fans differ depending on which role they associate you with?
The number one thing that I notice in terms of if people recognize me when I'm out, when I go out without a stitch of makeup on and my hair back and go to Whole Foods looking like crap in my Jimmy Jam scrams, people go, oh my God, Charlotte Lost, I loved you. And then if I've made a bit of an effort and put my things together, people go, oh my God, Zelina, Once Upon a Time. Always. And I never get recognized for the other one the other way around.
Dion K, any memorable moments on the set of Lost that you can remember?
Of Lost?
Who is the diva on that set? Come on, give me something.
I can't do it.
I mean, there was a diva, though.
I will tell you.
How many divas were on that set? One, two, three. How many do you remember? Like, oh, they're difficult. They are difficult. You won't say the name.
But one was the dog. The dog was the first character I met on the set. I was sitting waiting for them to finish the scene. And he came and sat next to me. My heart fluttered. I was like, oh, my God, I was so nervous. I'm like, the dog, it's the dog. I was so excited.
Oh, I want to hear this diva.
Not doing it.
You're not going to do it. It's so funny because every once in a while you'll work with someone, you're like, man, they just aren't happy. Something's going on. Maybe they're just going through a lot of stuff.
That's what it is.
That's what you have to do. You have to go, as long as it doesn't affect my work, and as long as they don't be bitchy to me.
But you know what it is? It's like, you know, I've had some really challenging financial chapters in my life. Really, you know, where I've had nothing. And then, so then when I'm working, I really try to kind of focus on the positive, no matter what the situation, just the blessing of I'm working and this is my happy place and I'm in my chair and I'm like, yeah, this is why I do what I do. So then when I see someone acting so poorly or being really unkind to hair and makeup or a PA, I'm just like, fuck off home then. You don't have to be here. We're not saving lives. We're making telly. And if you don't want to do it, then fucking don't. There's a million other people that will cut their right arm off to be sitting where you are. I have no patience for it.
Yeah.
That's something you've just lost me. I'm like, I'm never going to be friends with you. You're not a nice person.
Can I guess who it was? You know, look, I love talking to you, and it's been a while, but I always follow you on Instagram. I'm happy for you. I genuinely am. And I know you went through a lot, like, you know, young age, you were modeling, and then you went to New York, and you were... And you did some soap operas, which are fucking, I don't know how anybody does those. How do they memorize 35 pages in a fucking day? I would puke all over my own penis. Did I just say that? But I'm just happy for you. And you're super talented and you deserve all of it.
Aww. Well, yeah. Lovely thing to say. Thank you. That means a lot coming from you.
Thank you. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Well,
it does. Thank you. That's really sweet. I like hearing that. Well, take it.
Yeah. You know what the best part about this interview is?
You?
No. That Milo didn't wake up crying.
Yay!
You were worried about that.
He's out cold. Where's his feet? Oh.
There's his feet.
He's out. He's such a good boy.
What's your handle so people could follow you?
At Bex Mader, B-E-X-M for mother, A-D-E-R, at Bex Mader. I'm a hoot and I'm very humble.
Obviously, if you listen to this, if you're this far along. At home with Sean and Bex, you could listen to her and her brother, Sean.
Well, not by blood, but my brother from another mother. He's like my brother, my best boy.
I see.
And that's our YouTube channel that we've been doing to kind of just have something to do during the pandemic and stop us all from going completely bonkers.
What do you want to do? What's the next thing you'd like to do?
I want to do a multicam in LA.
Really?
Be a giant penis and be home for lunchtime to see my baby.
They always say that multicam is the best job. You ask any actor. I think I'm the only one in the universe who thinks differently.
I'm sorry.
I don't think it's easy. I don't.
Oh, my God.
You know why? Because I've done it. And the reason why because there's something about everything's changing every day. The lines are changing. This is changing. And all of a sudden, Friday night, you're going up in front of an audience and you could be learning lines. And I'm just, I like half hours or movies or I like to have the material where I could really get into it. I know it's that material. I don't like it. Things changing all the time. I don't like that.
It is stressful for sure. Especially like, you know, as it gets rewritten every day and you might lose a joke that you've become really attached to and you're no. And then it's gone. And then it comes back and you're like, oh, it's back. And then it goes again. And it's definitely an emotional roller coaster. And I did a pilot with James Burrows and Sean Hayes in 2018. And I'm like, this is going to be huge. The entire crew and set of writers were from Will and Grace. I'm like, it's a hit. It's on NBC. It's definitely going to get picked up. You know, and you spent, we had 2 weeks instead of 1 week to rehearse it. And we finally get to the end. And then they changed all of my lines on the night. Never seen them before. And they just hand me a laptop and they're like, so these are the changes. I'm going to cut that bit. You're going to go a different way around the table and here are your new jokes. Okay. And I'm like, they're like, okay, let's go. And I'm like, what?
Did you fuck up a lot? All these changes. Were you able to just get them and deliver them easily?
Yeah. But it wasn't always breezy. I mean, the stakes were really fucking high and I was so nervous. But then when I did it and I crushed it and I got a laugh, the high. It was so high.
Yeah, I remember them throwing things at me. I'm like, all right, Michael, John's going to say this, and then you're going to say that. For some reason, this is when I start feeling dumb again as a kid because I can't
he's going to say that, then he's going to say that, and you're going to say that. So while they're going, I can't even listen because all I could think about is the line I'm supposed to say.
Got it.
And it was just, I don't like that.
It's too stressful a format for you. It's too stressful a format.
I would do it, but I always would say, I hope that they didn't change my shit. And sometimes, I remember my dad came one night, live a studio audience, and they gave me this monologue at the end. And I remember going, I just went over it 1,000 times because, you know, I can't mess this up. And I remember on the set, I said it and they go, all right, reposition, did it again, didn't really get it. And then the director was cool enough to go, all right, moving on. And we picked it up at the end when the audience was gone.
Oh, nice. That's really
I love live theater, but that stuff is just like, I don't like it as much. Maybe if I, you know.
Maybe if you were producing it, you know what I mean? So you were in control.
I would never produce a multi-camera. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, that's true. I want to make a horror movie. That's my goal. So. All right, look, I love you.
I'm available.
Hey, but believe me, I know. You could do it. You could freaking do it. See? you can do it. You could play crazy. I think you could play crazy. Bex. Hey, listen, thank you for allowing me.
Like Chucky, let's be honest.
Listen, thank you for allowing me to be inside of you. This has been wonderful.
Oh, it felt so good. Thank you so much. Anytime.
All right, I love you. Thank you.
I love you too. See you soon. Bye, darling.
Guys, great episode. I like how open she's so silly, right? I mean, she just lets go and doesn't give a shit. Rebecca, thank you for coming on. I hope you guys keep doing your thing. And, you know, that live podcast with Zachary Levi and I was supposed to be July 2nd, but obviously that had to be pushed and it will be later in the fall. So keep looking. Wait another month. You'll know it because I'll post everything when we have it rescheduled at the right time. And again, hey, support the show, the handles, Twitter, Instagram. It's pretty much Inside of You Podcast or Instagram and Facebook, Inside of You Pod on Twitter. Email your friends, tell them to watch it. And I would certainly appreciate that. And patrons, thank you again. If you're interested, go to patreon.com or there's an app and you can go on there and get bonus material and things from me and merch. And just check it out. It's a lot of fun. And the other Patreon is Where Have All the Good Horror Movies Gone? And that's another Patreon I do with John Heater, Napoleon Dynamite, and it's a blast. Why don't I read off the wonderful patrons who make this show possible? Nancy D, Mary B, Leah S, Trisha F, Sarah V, Yukiko, Jill E, Brian H, Lauren G, Nico P, Barry L. It's actually Barry I. I mess it up every time. Angelina G. Lee, Jerry W, Kevin R, Emily K, Rob, Bob B, Robert B. Are they brothers? One's Bob, one's Robert. Jason W, Kristen K, Amelia O, Allison L, Jason D, Raj, Joshua D, Emily B, CJP, Samantha M, Hamza B. Sorry, I had to say it three times. Jennifer N, Stacy B, Carly T. Almost done here. Reen, Jennifer S. Hi, Reen, Jennifer S. Janelle B, Tabitha 272, Kimberly E, Melissa C, Mike E, Jake M, Marissa N, Judith D, Nanriello. Judith D, Ramira, Beth B, Chris F, Sarah F, Chad W, Leanne B, Darla W, Jackie P, Rodrigo S, Rachel C, Ray A, Maya P, Megan D, DeMario, Jennifer C, Madi S, Tiffany L, Kendrick, hi Tiffany, Kendrick F, Ashley E, Kelly W, Sigourney P, Tom T, Matt W, Belinda N, and Benjamin R. And if you're wondering why I read off these names, it's part of the Patreon. These folks are what's called the top tier. And every episode at the end, I name their names off. And I wish I could take the time to talk about each person or say how much I appreciate them, but they know it. So that's why you're hearing those names. If you're like, why does he read these names? Well, that's part of the tier, and I enjoy doing it, and these people keep the show going. So thank you to all these wonderful patrons of mine. And look for me on the Instagram lives, folks. I'll be doing them soon. I try to do one once a week if I can, and it's a lot of fun. I always bring people, random folks in, and you meet some amazing people. We had this 16-year-old girl who answered, and so there's a video of her and I talking, and she just kind of seemed a little bit anxious or, you know, sort of, I don't know, in a funk, which I understand. And we talked, and I felt like it just, she said, you know, this made my night or something like that. It made my night.
it just was nice to talk to someone and go, hey, I remember being young and not being, I wasn't popular. And you can tell this young lady is really bright, and I think she's going to have a great future. So it was nice. So those Instagram lives. Support the show whenever you can, however you can, emailing, tweeting, all that stuff. Get it out there. Help me help you. Terrible that I quoted that one. And that's all I have to say. So thank you, and thank you for allowing me to be inside each and every one of you guys.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now, here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.